and welcome to the show brought to you by the YAFC. My name is Everett Deibler, and welcome to our, I guess this would be our fourth episode now, believe it or not, and we're really, really excited to bring this to you. And for those of you that are new to what we're doing here, the YAFC is the Youth Advocates for Change, which is a part of the Raise Center, which is a project of SPAN, and the Raise Center focuses on supporting parents and parent centers in supporting youth with disabilities in the transition process. And the YAFC, or Youth Advocates for Change, is really focused on bringing that youth voice to the forefront in what Raise does on a daily basis. And so we've really enjoyed doing this podcast and getting things out there to people. And today's topic for us is healthcare transition and why it's so important to involve youth in those healthcare conversations. And so with me today, we have some podcast veterans at this point. First, I'm going to turn it over to Jennifer. Jennifer, you want to introduce yourself, say where you're from, and why being a part of the YAFC is just so freaking amazing.
Yeah, I'm Jennifer. I am on the West Coast in California, but I grew up in New Jersey. And being part of the YAFC is amazing because we get to choose what we're doing here, which, you know, I'm big on autonomy in every aspect of my life. And that's one of the things that the YAFC takes seriously.
Yeah, awesome. And which ender for tonight do we have?
Yeah, so I'm Erin. I'm from snowy Minnesota. And what I like being part of the YAFC for is just, I think it's always really empowering to be with people with disabilities and especially to talk about things we care about. And so I feel like we get to do that here. And like Jennifer said, we really get to talk and choose what we believe in.
And it's really, really fun for me to be, I guess, not a youth anymore, but to be able to be in these conversations and helping to do this podcast and just kind of being here to, I don't want to even say lead it because that's not really what I'm doing. I'm more or less asking questions. And like you just said, it's what we like to do, right? So I get really pumped up about actually being in the room and that just talking about this and being here. So thank you both for being here. And I know that this whole idea of, Jennifer, you already mentioned it, autonomy, being able to make your own decisions, having the support that you need. And I think we always say the word around transition for a lot of reasons, right? There's a lot of reasons why transition is brought up, but we're focusing on the transition from school to adult life. But part of that process is, I think, the transition to adult medicine, right? And healthcare. And I don't really think that a lot of people, when you're in an IEP meeting, discuss that part of what it is. Right. Or discuss that part. They might say, oh, you have to call your own doctor or like make your own appointment. But I would and I'll go to Erin first. And then Jennifer, after Erin answers, if you just want to kind of dovetail off what she says, that's fine. But can you tell us about your transition to adult medicine? Like, what was that like to kind of make that move to kind of be in charge?
Yeah, so I have the honor of having several doctors that I had to transition to, which I think the biggest word is that it's really intimidating because you go from, you know, care that's made for kids and now you're going to adults with whatever that means. But no matter what, I think transitioning doctors can be so intimidating because no matter what, they're relearning you, they're relearning your disability and everything that encompasses. And not only that, but you as a person and what you need in life when it comes to school or your goals or work or whatever you're doing. So I would say my transition, it came pretty fast. And I was pretty lucky to be part of a healthcare system that not only had excellent specialty services for kids, but they also have an adult program. So they actually were able to like sit me down in a room and like talk through the process of, here are some doctors that you could transition to depending on your specialty. Here are places you can go to if we don't have those specialists. And I think one of the really great things that they did was really look at like a holistic approach to health as well And so this was kind of like one of the first times that someone talked to me about like mental health when it came to disabilities. So even talking about here are new services that you might not have considered because you are an adult and you need to consider some of those new things. So I think that was a really great opportunity for me to think about, you know, some of my doctors and some of those specialists, but then also, I guess, you know, we'll get into this conversation a little bit more, but you know, when you're in that time of transition, not just it's intimidating to me with these new doctors, but now you have to take care of everything that's associated with that. And it's sure. A complicated system.
Can you, before Jennifer, before you answer, Aaron, can you just, can you define the word holistic? When you say the word, I mean, we say that word all the time. And I just want to make sure for young adults that might be listening, that that's a really important word. And I think that it's something that people should be striving to be looked at holistically. Mm-hmm. So could you take a shot at defining that for me? And then I'll go to Jennifer to answer the question.
Yeah, the way I always think of it is kind of a full body approach. And I think when it comes to even like mental health has aspects that affect our whole body. And so thinking about every aspect having a role in how we live our lives.
Yes.
Even the approach of how, you know, our work environment could, you know, affect our health. That could be even holistic.
Right. Or how school could, right. And how, So it's basically how everything impacts everything is kind of what an holistic approach is, right? It's how does my whole experience impact what I'm experiencing? And that's mm-hmm. a weird way of saying it, but that's kind of what it is. And so, and I know that you can't really tell if you're watching this on video, we all do here. The three of us have different types of disabilities. And so I think our healthcare journeys are similar, but different. And so Jennifer, I don't want to like call out your diagnosis, but I do want to kind of put out there that you and Aaron live very different experiences. So what was your transition to adult medicine like for you? Did you have the natural support that Aaron seemed to have when she made her transition over?
No, and I mean, I think there are reasons I was without that support that go beyond that are a little more personal that I'm not going to get into.
Right, sure.
But for me, the transition was less of a smooth transition and more of dropping all of, like, I dropped all support, some purposely because it was toxic support and some because I didn't have the resources to get to that support anymore. And then without all of that, I had to slowly build back up and figure out, okay, what do I need here? What do I need here? And going from 1,000 supports, 80% of which were actually hurting me in some way, to no healthcare or basically learning everything that I had to learn in my early 20s. And, you know, maybe a little bit before that, that was a journey I wish I could have had some expertise to draw on from my youth.
Yeah, because I was going to ask, hearing you say that, it sounds like to me that you had very little things done to prepare you for that, for taking things over.
Yeah, and yesterday I was on a call with my doctor and talking about how I was on dozens of different medications and I had a number of different health interventions when I was younger, and I have no idea how effective any of those were because I was so removed from my own healthcare.
Right.
That
sure.
All of that information that I could be drawing on as an adult is just lost. Because I wasn't in the room, and I don't have access to that anymore. So I'm sort of starting from ground one in a way that I wish would have been so much easier if I didn't have to do that.
Right, and so I think what you're pointing out, and I can almost guess because I know Erin and her family experience. Aaron, I would guess, were you included in those conversations early on with your family?
Yeah, and It's funny that, you know, I just immediately wanted to like start talking after Jennifer said all like, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is like, I acquired my disability when I was in sixth grade, right? So when I was learning about my disability and what it all meant and how my future was going to be and everything, the doctors basically chose to not talk to me. And so it's a transition to even like, it's almost like when I transitioned to adult medical care, it was like I was learning my disability again, you know, from like an right. adult perspective yes. and not this like heavily filtered child filter.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that Jennifer's points kind of brought to my head were that you need to know what's going on at the level that you can understand it as soon as possible, mm-hmm. right? So that you're not yeah. experiencing what Aaron just said, right? I had to relearn these things again because everything was put through these terms that weren't really real. I guess that's the way I'll explain it. Like mm-hmm. it was watered down so that you could sort of get it, but you need to be in the room as much as possible just so mm-hmm. you have an idea. I mean that even goes for like assessments you do for like college assessments or job things, right? You better understand why you're doing what you're doing, what it's for, and why it's so important, right? And so if you're a parent listening to this, hear what Jennifer said and hear what Aaron said. They weren't in the room, right? They weren't being talked to. You should try to avoid that. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, and the few times that like I wasn't being spoken over were like I was the person, even as young as like 5 or 6, there are a handful of times that I remember, you know, in 18 years, there's 4 or 5 stories of things that like I was actually part of. I was the main person at that time. And those remain the things 20 years later that were the most helpful out of the entire 18 years of my childhood. And you think that like something that happened at 6 should not have been the most helpful thing I did, or something I learned at age 10. But it wasn't how young I was. It was the fact that I was being treated like a person.
Right.
Like you can
yes.
You might not be an adult, but you are a person.
Because part of the reality, at least to me, when you're going to a your primary care physician.
Yeah.
They have medical training. They are experts. But I can honestly say that they don't always know about disability diagnoses in a real way, right? Aaron yeah. talked about those specialists, right? There's a reason why those people exist, right? It's because they have the training that some people don't have. And I think that makes it hard to advocate for yourself. So the next question I have, and I'll go to Jennifer first and just maybe... What have been some challenges you have faced when advocating for yourself within medical care and kind of preparing to take over, you're now in charge of your adult care,
yeah.
right? What has that been like for you trying to be your own advocate in this space?
I mean, it is, there's a lot of pitfalls, right? I think especially like I'm better at it now, but especially at the beginning, going into appointment and being like, okay, I'll remember that. There were a number of appointments that I had to learn how to like, okay, I got to message my doctor back because I don't remember what was said. And coming back to that, you know, it's overwhelming. Like the first time I speak to a doctor myself, it was overwhelming. And I didn't have the option of being eased into it. I needed medical care at that time. And there's I don't even know that I can list them because there's so many things that just like, it wasn't that this thing was hard per se, it was that I had no experience.
Right.
It was that the first time I was doing it alone with no one to even ask like the small questions to I work in a setting where I assist other people, And one thing that I sort of see a lot that I experienced firsthand was getting an after visit summary from a visit and having no idea like how to parse any of that information.
Like how to
process. Because I was so like out of touch with just everything. And it wasn't that the information was difficult. It was that I had never been the one to do that.
So it's almost like you wish you would have had someone to kind of push you to learn those things or to show you the way. Yeah. These are the kind of things that you wish would happen. You wish that you would have been in the room to understand it more. You wish that someone would have talked you through some of those things that you get after a visit, like or those debriefs.
Yeah.
Aaron, what about you and advocating? What are the challenges?
Yeah, I would say like some of it is, you know, something that maybe needs to be communicated to medical staff. But I remember, you know, making super serious decisions or even talking through serious things in my, medical life. And it was almost like I was being talked down to, or there were multiple times where I would ask like pretty serious questions, as in like, what does this mean? For example, like I was having a procedure done where I was going to be put under anesthesia. And I was like, what is a DNR? You know, like what does that even mean? I've never heard of this acronym, didn't know what it was. And they started laughing. And I'm like, well, seriously, what is it? And then they tell me, and I'm like, well, that's a really serious thing. Like, why are they laughing about something that's super serious and could have an impact on my health? And so that's one thing that I always think back to, is that it's like, there needs to be a seriousness brought to this because I'm taking the initiative to understand this. And if I was an adult asking that question, I don't think that they would laugh, you know? Right. So I think there needs to be education from the staff, and that they need to recognize that it's a huge step for either youth who are transitioning or even young adults to take that initiative. And that, you know, it makes you not want to self-advocate when you kind of have that type of reaction. And so I would say that'd be the biggest thing. And then also like for me, you know, I'm a wheelchair user, and so I have to rely on other people to transfer me or to, you know, move my body in certain ways. And so I think, you know, one of the challenges of advocating for myself is that depending on the situation, the biggest thing I have is my voice. And so learning to, you know, proactively discuss how it needs to be done for it to be safe for me, you know, and so that was a whole process in itself.
Yeah. Like almost feeling empowered by that. Mm-hmm. Like I my autonomy is through my voice.
Yep.
Right. My decision-making, my independence is through that. Right. Cause independence isn't always doing everything on your own. Right. Yeah. It's being able to be in charge of what's happening around you. Shout out to Judy Heumann, who just passed away. If you don't know who that is, Google her. That's what one of the things that she always says about independent living. It's not always about being able to do it on your own, but being in charge and being proactive about how things are done around you so that you have as much control and understanding as possible. Right. And so,
Go ahead. Just to add on that, I think something that I absolutely is a big thing for me with my doctors today is not being belittled when I ask a question. I mean, I have my current doctor who is into my life right now. My current doctor is leaving, and for reasons, I'm going to have to be switching my doctors. And so I'm asking 1,000 questions, even more so than usual. And when I get the new doctor, I'm going to ask those questions again. And if I don't feel safe asking those questions, I'm going to have to ask for a different doctor, right? Like that's not
right.
I've been with one doctor for a little bit, but I need to be able to ask those questions because there is power in having knowledge, right? If the doctors aren't even willing to give you that like little bit of power, that power starts to compound. And if you don't have the little bit of knowledge, you don't have anything beyond that.
Well,
And you can't do anything if you don't if you're not able to ask a question, you can't do anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think for me too, that is one of the ways in life that will get you to be disqualified from me. like and I will cut you off if I get made fun of for asking a question that I want to know the answer to. Right.
But there's also, my brother also, my brother deals with chronic fatigue and some other health issues as well. And we've talked a lot about like just doctor vibes and when we've said, okay, this is not okay. And when we learned that.
Right.
And how like
what your boundaries are and what your expectations are and what you want out of a doctor.
Yeah.
And I think you are so good at this. Like you're so good, Jennifer, because I'd kind of bringing things to light. And I think one of the things is you can choose to leave a doctor. You can say, this is not the right fit. This isn't the right person for me. You can get those weird vibes and be like, I'm out. But then when you find a good one, it can be an amazing experience. Right. And so, but telling a doctor that you're done can sometimes feel like a daunting thing, right? Being like making that decision and telling them.
Yeah.
But it happens all the time. Right. So people shouldn't fear that. They should find the care they feel most comfortable with.
Yeah. There was a provider that I was with in a number of years ago. I don't know exactly what year. And it just wasn't working. And so eventually I had to be like, look, this is not, I do not feel like my time or I am being respected by you. And so I'm going to find another provider.
Right.
And I think this was 2019 or 2020. And they were upset. But I was like, look. And so the impetus for it was that I got on a Zoom call at the beginning of COVID. So yeah, it was 2020 to discuss something with them. And I was waiting for half an hour. And then they called me to reschedule. And I was like, I don't feel like my time is being valued here. And
right. You can understand waiting in the time that there is.
Yeah. One of my big things with doctors is like, if I'm going to take time to meet with you, I don't want to be waiting for that long.
Sure.
Cause I don't want to sit by a phone because that's my time.
Right.
Well,
and I think for, in my lifetime, having a disability, being a chair user, and going to doctors and having surgeons and doing surgeries in there. I don't know if you've had this experience too, mm-hmm. where you'll go visit a surgeon and you'll literally be there for, it could be a whole day. You might as well just schedule a whole day because you could be waiting for hours. And Erin shaking her head, yes, right,
yep.
Right.
It's
for those that are listening, and it's like, how disrespectful are you to the process? But you're not even telling people, like, here's why I'm backed up, and here's why I can't see you right now, and this is what's happening. I'm really sorry. Nothing, right? So
it's so common. It's so common where people are just over. And I don't know if they're overscheduling. I don't know what it is. But it's one of those things that I think a lot of people will deal with. And a lot of, but for me, it's like, that is something that I'm not going to deal with because it's a little thing, but it adds up. And it, to me, it shows the baseline level of respect.
So, yeah. And so I think you got, both of you have brought up a lot of really great things to think about if you're a young adult or you're a parent supporting a young adult to do this, you know, like make sure people are in the room earlier, have conversations, explain the details, have them talk with doctors regularly, like when they're there, all those kind of things. But are there other pieces of advice that you would give to a guardian, a mom, a dad, who really want to help their child make this transition? Because I know for me, I think I said this on another episode, that my mom was all about independence and helping me do this, but it would basically be throwing me in the room and letting me go. and I don't know if that was the right choice or not. I mean, obviously I'm okay now, but I don't know. So is there any advice that other advice that you would offer to family members supporting someone like this, like to do this, and why it's so important? Is there any other advice that you can offer?
As early as possible, I'm going to draw on the car metaphor here. As early as possible, you want to be putting your child in the passenger seat. Even if they're not in the driver's seat yet, like even from a young grade school age, they can be in the passenger seat, getting that right next to your view of every decision that's being made. And being asked for every decision that's being made.
Yeah.
And I would say at high school at the latest, you want to be moving the child into the driver's seat with you in the passenger seat. And there's some flexibility there. But I think just as early as possible, you want to be shifting that responsibility. And if there's a concrete piece of advice that I want to give, if there is a question that is asked specifically by I don't know if child is the right word, but child.
Yeah, by the youth. Yeah.
You want the answer to that in writing. Because that is, for me, beginning to ask questions was a thing that I wasn't doing as a child. And part of it was it felt pointless. And part of it was I was never asked or even in the room. But you want every bit of engagement that child is doing to be documented, because that, I believe, is going to help. That's going to come back. You're going to see that come back as the questions are treated as real things, the concerns, not even like questions, it's like, hey, this matters to me, this is something I notice, is treated with respect. That is going to be acknowledged more and more, and you're going to see that person stepping up.
Yes.
As they're treated like a person who has the right to speak.
Yeah. And I just think, I mean, what you just said to end it there was perfect. Like, you want the young adult to feel respected in the space. So making sure their questions get answered and get heard is going to matter. It's like, if you promise a toddler something, you better fulfill that promise, because then they learn trust and they learn that there's support there. The same thing applies here. Put it in writing. Make sure it gets answered. Aaron, I don't know if you have any other thoughts to add on to what Jennifer said.
Yeah, I think like kind of building off of that in a way, I think is like giving your youth the opportunity to feel empowered in their voice and what they have to say. And what I mean by that is especially, you know, as a wheelchair user myself, I think of, you know, there's doctors or other health professionals that may talk over you, or they may not talk to you directly. And I think as a starting point, I think parents need to have that conversation with health professionals that it's like, talk to, you know, my child or teenager or young adult, you know, talk to them. This is their health, and kind of starting to hand over, you know, that power and that empowerment that they'll grow off of. And then that will slowly transition into this confidence that the youth will have to have their voice be heard. And if they start talking to, you know, the parent who may be with you, or the, you know, your personal care assistant or whatever, that they feel empowered to say, hey, like, this is my health and you need to talk to me, not my PCA or something. And so I think that's a big thing. And I think it all just goes back to like, your voice can be such a powerful tool. And so thinking of ways how to start that at a young age, I think is super important.
Sure. And I think that goes for almost any space, right? It even goes down to like, you're going to be at a restaurant, have them order their own food, right? And don't let a waiter talk to you as the parent, make them talk to your young adult when they're going to make a choice of, I don't know, what clothes they want to wear, you know, like empowering all of that and honoring what people are saying. It's going to help when they're having those serious conversations about their health and their well-being with someone that can support them. you want to be empowering their voice at all times. And so thank you both. I know that this topic is, like I said, probably not discussed enough, and it should be more. And I think we might be doing more episodes in the future, more specifics about some of this, but I appreciate your time, Aaron and Jennifer, to talk about this and be so open and be so candid about your experience. But I think that if you're listening to this and you're a parent, I think you got some nuggets about what to do, or a little tips about what to do to kind of help this along and realize that it is a process. And it's really, really awesome for me to wrap this up by saying you can find our other episodes on the Raise Center website right now on our own podcast page. There are video versions available and audio versions available of our first three episodes. We're hoping soon to be on Google Play and Apple Podcasts, but you can at least find the other three episodes. If you like this one, if you just Google Raise Center, you will find our podcast on that website. So happy listening. Thank you, Jennifer and Aaron, for your time. And hope everybody has a good rest of the week. And we'll see you soon with the next episode. Mm-hmm.